Pastor 12. Okay. At this call, you're reading about this conference. One of the sessions, first of all, it was a fantastic conference. But one of the sessions was given on talking during davening.
Right.
Which is a real issue. It was given by this guy. I'm going to call him a guy. A rav. A rabbi. His name is Rabbi Weinberger. He has a store called Ace Kodesh in Woodmere, New York, which is on Long Island. And I mean, you have to look at him. He's like, he looks as Hasidic as you can imagine. Wears the whole thing, the bekesha with the long beard and the hat. He wasn't wearing a fur hat. It wasn't Shabbos, but you know, with the curled up ends and the long payas. Wasn't really looking towards the women in the audience, you know. But he talked, and I so badly want to bring him here. He's so on the mark. He's with it. He knows what's going on. He uses terms that are commonly used. Cool terms, you know, he's not like really in his own world. So one of the things he was talking about, he was one of the speakers at the plenary session on talking during davening. He said the reason people, and this is how he speaks, the reason people talk in davening is because they don't know the shepherd and they've never met the shepherd. This is how he's talking. And you know what? And I was thinking, you know, he's really right. People don't have a strong everyday connection to God. These are mitzvot things that we do that we just go through sort of by rote. And we don't have that strong connection. We don't have this strong feeling. So then I was like, okay, I'm going to give a class called Who is God? That's going to be my class next term. And I'm like, whoa, that's huge. Where am I going to go for that? I'm like, okay, there's a book, you know, Herman Wolf wrote a book, This Is My God, and then Rabbi Lamb wrote an addendum to it, and I shall glorify him. So, you know, I'm like, okay, sure, I could use that as a text, and we'll move forward, and then I'm like, no, you know what? So the decided thing for now, and you'll find out at the end of the summer if it works or not, because it depends on how well I get to it in the summer.
Thank you.
My plan for now is next term to do a class on the Yud Gimel Ikarim of the Rambam, the 13 principles of faith. Now, I'm telling you quite truthfully and quite honestly right now, I have no idea how it's going to happen. But you know that it's going to be text-based, because that's the only way I work. But it's with a different, instead of just the analytical, we do a lot of analytical Chumash stuff now to take it to the next level with a little bit of the emotional, the intellectual, emotional, spiritual. Maybe I'll call it Learn to Know the Shepherd.
Well,
come meet the Shepherd, whatever. You know, no, it's going to be, we'll think of some catchy title. That's going to be after the summer.
After the summer.
We're going to take a break for the summer. So, to that end, we have 3 classes left, I believe. Is that correct? Today and 2 more after that. Today's class is going to be our last class where we're going to be actually dealing with women in Tanakh. And the woman we're going to be dealing with is Miriam, part 2 of Miriam. We did part 1 last week, her time in Mitzrayim and her time at the Yam, at the Reed Sea. And this week we're going to be dealing with her sin, her big sin, and her death, and her well, which is why the class is called Gossip on Water Coolers. Catchy, huh? First catchy title of the term, I think. And then for the next 2 weeks, we're going to be discussing the concept of Midrash. We've mentioned in the last, I know. So it was but it is recorded. We'll give you the CDs, or you can get it online. And as always, I'm looking for, you know, I'll take feedback from it. We'll try it out, because, you know, there are some other speaking opportunities that I have in town, and I'm sure that we can use those also as an opportunity to jump off further into Midrash. But we'll do 2 classes just briefly on an overview of Midrash. What is it? How do you deal with the crazy, whacked out ones? You know, which we've been learning a lot of them. So we'll do that for the next 2 weeks. And the next term, hopefully, we'll do the Yud Gimel Ikarim. And we'll put the rest of the women in Tanakh on hold for later on. Is that your phone?
Excuse me. That's a sports, if you want help. It's a sports report.
Oh, okay. The one.
No, it's still talking about the kitchen.
No,
you and my best. No, I like it. I don't even know if I like them, but there was the Lakers and my kids are in California, so they're real. iPhone. It was my phone. I did a sports report. It's very important. Well, you, I don't even know sports.
Weather. I'm very weather.
They were so down, and then I think they were very behind, and then they really came in. Okay. So what I'd like to do is begin tonight by looking at, we're starting kind of late, by looking at Parakut Bet, chapter 12, in which is actually last week's Parsha, Parsha Salos, we're on page number, somebody? 794. 795.
Oh, you're in English.
No, I'm in 94 and 95.
794 and 795, which is chapter 12. This is her big, this is the big thing. It says, Adir Miriam v'aharon b'moshe al-azot ha'isha kushit asher l'akach. Isha kushit l'akach. Miriam and Aaron spoke, what does it say? Against Moshe. The actual literal translation is they spoke... about Moshe, in Moshe, very strange. About the Cushite women that he took because he had taken a Cushite woman. I need a caveat for this class, ladies. No peeking on the bottom. Okay? Nobody. God forbid, I know. Oh, good. I'm glad. Okay. Bayomaru.
We already know.
Bayomaru. We already know the bottom, right? Bayomaru. Rak ach b'moshe diber Hashem. And they, what did they say? They said, does God only speak to Moshe? Halo gam baron diber? Doesn't he also speak to us? Bayishma Hashem, Hashem hears. Narrator, parenthetical comment coming in. Ba'ish Moshe anav me'od. Moshe is very modest. Me'kol ha'adam asher al-pnei ha'zman. Not only is he very modest, he is the most modest of anyone who ever lived. Parenthetical comment. We move forward in the story. Ba'yom Hashem, Pit Om, El Moshe, B'el Aaron, B'el Miriam. And suddenly, at a time when they weren't expecting it, God calls out to Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, the three of them together, to Ushalosh, Tachem, El Ohel Moed, go out, the three of you, to the Ohel Moed, to the tent of the meeting. Vayetu Shalosh Tam, the three went out. Vayered Hashem Ba'amud Anan. God descends in his cloud. Vayamod Petach HaOhel. His presence is very obvious, and he sits there at the opening of the tent. Vayikra Aaron and Miriam. He calls out to Aaron and Miriam. Vayetu Shnehem, the two of them leave. So now Moses left in the tent. Aaron and Miriam are outside the tent, right outside, talking face-to-face practically with God. Vayomer, Hashem says, Shimuna Jevarai, listen to my words. In the end of Yachem Hashem, B'mara Allah Batvada, B'chalom Adverbo, if you have a Navi from among you, if you have a prophet, someone who has a relationship with God, a connection with God, a communication with God, not just something that we have, but something on a much deeper level, much more direct level, I will appear to him in an image, in a reflection, in a dream. Lo chein avdi Moshe, not my servant Moshe. The whole beiti ne'eman, who of my entire house, he is the most faithful, the most loyal. Pe'o pe'a daberlo. I will speak, I will speak with him mouth to mouth, as we say in Hebrew, ba'arba einayim, with eye to eye, face to face. Umar em v'lo b'chidot, u'tmunat Hashem yabit. And I will see my clear image, no tricks. Umadua lo yareitam v'daber davdi b'moshe. Why weren't you afraid? Why weren't you fearful and awesome of speaking about Moshe? Ayicha af Hashem bam, v'yelech. God gets angry and he leaves. It's another good class topic. Well, that will probably definitely figure into our Yudhim Amidit. Okay, whatever. Now, Anan Sham Yah Ohel, then the cloud lifts away from the Ohel, and what do we see? The name Miriam Mitzolat Kashalek. Miriam is white all over, not with leprosy, with Tzolat. Tzolat has been translated as leprosy because it's the closest thing that we could imagine that Tzolat is like. But Tzolat is not a physical ailment. There's a spiritual ailment that has physical symptoms. Purely spiritual ailment. A person doesn't catch tzara'at from touching somebody else. It's something that only happens because he performed a particular kind of transgression. And the Gemara actually gives us a list of many different things that a person could do to get tzara'at. If a person brings a ketoret, which is the incense sacrifice that the Kohen Gadol brings on Yom Kippur, if he brings a ketoret, he gets tzara'at. There are like a list of all different kinds of things, but the most well-known sin that a person gets tarat for is lashon hara. Okay, so the cloud goes away. You see, she is white. Now you said Aaron al Miriam, but he named it tarat. Aaron turns to Miriam and sees that she has gotten leprosy. Or Shabbat, rather. Don't hold it against us, please, Moshe. Like, hello? 2 seconds ago, he had no problem speaking badly. Now, all of a sudden, I mean, he's your fair weather friend. These words are very confusing. Don't let her be like a dead person that comes out of its mother's womb. They're both leaving the same mother's womb, and half of her flesh is being consumed, and you are of her flesh, and you're not. You have to stand up for her also. As we were told at our Shabbos table, the Shabbos, this is the shortest tefillah, the shortest prayer ever recorded. Tell not Rafan Allah. Moshe calls out Hashem, God, please cure her. And Hashem says to Moshe, the Aviha Yarok Yarak Bifaneha Haloti Khalim Shivat Yamin, he says to her, were your father to spit in her face, would she not be humiliated for 7 days? I'm going by the English translation here. He said, Gir Shivat Yamin Mikutsa Machanev Akhar Terase. Secure her for 7 days outside of the camp, and afterwards you'll gather her together with you and keep going. Let you shagar Miriam Mechutzalachaneh. She was secluded outside of the camp. She died Yamin for 7 days. The nation did not travel, did not continue where they were going further until they had collected her. And after they left Chatzirot, they left this place, this whole story happened in Chatzirot, and then they went and they left and they camped in the Bat Haran. I was promised a closed door. Excuse me a minute. All right. So, the first question I have for you, let's go back. We're going to be focusing on the first three psukim in the first half of our discussion this evening. I have about 3 classes condensed into 45 minutes for tonight. Because that's how it has to be sometimes. But let's look for a moment at these first three psukim where this sin is presented to us. And I would like you to come up with something that's missing. Just in these first three psukim. Something, a piece of information that's missing from the story.
Aaron, did he...
Okay, yes, he doesn't seem to get punished, but he's definitely referred to as one of the sinners. Excellent. Mm-hmm. What else? What other piece of the puzzle is missing?
Is this what they said? What they were saying? They said. What's it mean? Well, we don't know. Let's say was Aaron said it or Miriam.
Okay.
It says they said.
Right. They said both of them.
It says Miriam not Aaron.
Yeah, it does say Miriam.
Why does it have Miriam's name for?
Because she started it.
How do you know? Well, what else? But what don't we know? What else don't we know? A major, major component of this story. Now, from the punishment, we can assume, I'll answer the question I just asked Zoya a moment ago. From the punishment, aside from the fact that she's written first, so we could assume that she started it, but she was the one who got the punishment. So we could assume that she was more at fault than Aaron was. And the Torah tells us clearly that they both said what's written in Pasuk Bet. Mm-hmm. But what's missing?
I don't know if this is missing, but I want to be sure about this, and that Miriam was just held on such a high level that anything that she said that even sounded remotely negative would be, you know, might have been okay for somebody else to say, but for her to say it was, you know, unacceptable.
But what about Aaron? It says that they both said what's written in Pasuk Bet.
Aaron wasn't a Navi. I don't think.
He wasn't necessarily a Navi. She was called a Navi, but he did get direct transmissions from God by Omer Shem El Aaron. All the mitzvahs to the Kohanim are given to Aaron.
What happened to Tzipora? Do we ever talk about it?
Why would you wonder about Tzipora in this particular story?
Because of the Kushit.
Ah, so you're assuming that Tzipora is the Kushit, or that the Kushit is somebody else, and he married this other woman who's a Kushit, and Tzipora is...
Yeah, I think it's Tzipora, too.
Why?
I don't know.
Because it's something you learned, something you were taught. Okay, that's fair.
We were taught bad.
Okay, so that you're strengthening my question. That may or may not be so, that she was the Kushit. I'm going to present to you our first source this evening is going to knock you off your chair.
If this is Tzipora, why were they against her?
I don't think they were so much
more than that. If this was Tzipora, not just why were they against her, but what did they say about her?
Because she was
but the Torah never tells us. It's never been focused again. Forget all the midrashim that you learned. Forget all of them. Even if you could, even I'm even allowing you to remember the midrash that Tzipora is the Kushit. Okay, even remembering that midrash says they said about her. About him, you know, they're talking about this Isha Kushit.
They didn't say anything wrong.
First of all, we don't even know what they said about her, because she didn't say anything. They said about her. They spoke about her because she took a Kushite woman.
And what's the name they spoke about her?
From the Kush. Kush is Ethiopia.
I thought it was from Midian.
You guys are amazing. Okay, let's look at our first... okay, these are three together. You can keep that one. This is page one. Page two.
Listen, even now in Israel, you know.
Page three.
Your prejudice is going to be
good. Yeah. Like, what is it?
Okay.
So, take the one and pass it on. Now, the light can't affect you.
I'm really you
should be able to recognize pages 1, 2, and 3.
The numbers are big and bold for the source numbers. Okay, so we have a number of issues here.
You know, the girl is so cute.
We have a number of issues here. Number one, we have who is this Isha Kushit? Number two, if the Isha Kushit is Tzipora, even if she's not, we don't know what they say about the Isha Kushit.
No.
Right.
But we do know that it was significant enough for her to get severely punished. I mean, so that, could you imagine being alone, like literally, really, seriously, honestly, alone, no phone calls, no visits, nothing for 7 full days outside of the camp by yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a really That's a really yucky kind of thing. So this is a really bad punishment she's getting. So she must have done something really bad. So the question is, what did she do? Now, I knew that you were going to know that Midrash of the Kushit, and I knew you were going to say, hey, but Tzipora is the Kushit. So I brought you another opinion first. Then we'll go back to that one. Okay. I want to introduce you. We've met him a couple of times before to Rashbam. Rashi had a grandson. Okay? Rashi, you all know, you've probably learned, Rashi, those of you who've learned any kind of Chumash class ever in your entire lives, including with me, have learned Rashi, primarily. Okay? Those of you who learned a little bit deeper, have a more extensive background, will have learned that Rashi is the simplest meaning of the text. That is wrong. Okay, according to all opinions. Now, let's take it to the next step. It's even Rashi himself who said that it was wrong. One of the things that we're going to be exploring tonight, if you can keep your minds with me, I know it's late and distracting, but... Rashi's mission statement himself, how he says, I intend to bring a midrash that is closest to the simple meaning of the text. And then Rashbam, his grandson, records a conversation in which Rashi said, I didn't do it like I really meant to do it, and if I only had time to do it over again, I would do it like you do it, Rashbam, which is almost no focus on the midrash. So the point which I'll tell you in Rashbam is unbelievably bold. If the Midrash gives a halachic interpretation of a pasuk, Rashbam can separate himself from that, which caused him to be deleted from his Perush on Bereishit. The beginning of Parashat Bereishit was deleted from several editions of Mikraot Gedolot because although I've never really studied it in depth, but my understanding of it is that he said, even though halakhically we know that the day starts in the evening and continues on through the daylight the next day, Nashman says that is true according to halakha, but not according to pshat, not the way the psukim read. And I'm not sure, again, what his rationale is, but because he was willing to make that dichotomy, that division between interpretation of the text and the way we actually live our lives, he was not necessarily accepted across the board. Well, he's back in, and he was in the rest of the Chumash anyway. So he gives you total, like, none of these midrashim. So is he going to say that the Ishak Rishib is Tzipora or not? Why not? Before we even look in Rashbam. You all said it before.
Her origins were from Midian.
Right. So how could she be an Isha Kushite, a woman from Kush, if she really actually came from Midian? Kush is Ethiopia. Midian is Nat. Midian is Midian. Midia. No, that's Madai. It's Midian. Okay. Source number one. Hakushi. Shehima Mishpachat Ham, from the family of Ham, descendant from one of the three sons of Noach.
Oh, he was dark skin, right?
Yes, he was dark skin. Ki isha kushit lakach, because he took a kushite woman. Ki dichtiv b'divei hayamim. As is written in the history books, and you have to stop a minute, because I have to tell you, I didn't bring you this midrash, but there is the most amazing midrash in the Yalkut Shimoni, a story. Here's what happened. How old was Moshe when he ran away from Egypt after killing the Egyptian?
80.
When he ran away.
I thought he was about 17 or something.
17. He was about 17, 18 years old when he ran away, and he shows up again as a leader of the Jewish people at age 80. The question is, what happened to those 60 years? So the Midrash says he was running away, and he got to this place. And in this place, they were under siege. And he said, and the whole city was under siege, and all the women and children were in the city, and they were being taken over by Bilam. And Bilam was the king who was trying to attack that city. And the city's name was Cush. And the king of Cush was ruling them, and he was exiled to outside the city with all the men. And the women and children were being killed off like that inside the city because they were starving and dying and all that kind of fun stuff. So Moshe is this young guy, and the king of Cush dies. And he says to Moshe, he, like, very much trusts Moshe because Moshe makes these great decisions. He says, we can go this way and we can go that. I don't remember all the details in the Midrash, but there's a detailed strategic description in the Midrash of how they recaptured the city. And after the king of Cush died, he told Moshe, they all appointed Moshe, you're going to be the next king of Cush. And lo and behold, the Midrash says he married a Cushite woman. The princess, the Cushite princess, who said, oh, you are so holy and holy and holy, and I can never strive to be as holy as you. So therefore, they never actually consummated the marriage, but they were married to each other. At this point, I don't remember what happens, he runs away, and he runs away, and he shows up in Midian, and he's a fugitive. I don't remember why, but he was a fugitive. He ran away. Yitro finds him and says, you, I'm putting you in jail. And he sticks him in a pit in the bottom of the ground, like all the way in the ground. Moshe's thrown into this pit, and Zipporah has mercy on him and starts feeding him. And everyone forgets about Moshe except for Zipporah. It's the most beautiful love story. I mean, it's in the Midrash, but... If this is in the movie? Okay, so this is the Midrash. I never saw the movie, but this is what the Midrash says. So she feeds him, and 10 years later, 10 years after Yitro throws him into the pit, she goes to Yitro and says, hey, Dad, what ever happened to that guy that you threw down the pit? And he's like, oh, yeah. So in the meantime, there was this big stick that was stuck in the garden. Was that in the movie also?
No.
Okay. There was this stick that was created. It was created. Ben Hashmashot, at twilight time, on the sixth day of creation, along with other special things that were created at that time, like the mouth of the donkey that spoke, and, you know, other such, if you could call it magical, but let's call them supernatural creations. And this stick was created then, has special words written on it, was made out of a special stone, was passed from generation to generation to generation, made it somehow to Yitro's backyard, at which point somebody stuck it into the ground and nobody could pull it out. So Yitro had a contest he had a beautiful daughter, Zipporah. Whoever can pull out the stick gets to marry my daughter. What does this sound like?
King Arthur.
King Arthur. Mm-hmm. Isn't that great?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's original. Okay. So they go, and she's like, well, you know, I think this fugitive guy who's been in the pit for 10 years can pull it out. And he's like, okay, I totally forgot about him. I thought he died. There must be some amazing miracle that he's living for 10 years without being sustained at all. Let's pull him out. And he pulls Moshe out, and Moshe, of course, is able to pull out the stick. So he marries Zipporah, et cetera. And at this point, he's close to 80 years old, and then they make their way to Mitzrayim. But it's a fabulous midrash. But the point, the reason I'm telling you this whole midrash, and we'll discuss fabulous midrashim next week, or some of them at least, is because Rashbam uses this as historical fact. He says that this is a historical fact that was written in history books. When he says here, Kidiktibi Divrei HaYamim, he's not talking about the book of the Tanakh that's called Divrei HaYamim, that's called Chronicles. He's talking about the Chronicles of the time period. Because when I taught this to my students, I said, okay, for homework, you have to find this story in Divrei HaYamim. He quotes Divrei HaYamim. Go find it. And I'm flipping through, looking into him and back and forth, and half of them are looking to the bottom of the Chumashim because it said there. It always quotes whenever there's a pasuk, it'll tell you where it's from. Mine doesn't say it. I can't find it. I don't know where it is. You know. So then we determined from that he's talking about general chronicles. Okay. That what was written in there, the Moshe Rabbeinu, Shemalach Be'eretz Kush Rabbeim Shana. The Moshe was the king in Kush for 40 years. Ve'lakach Malkah Achat, and he took a queen, below Shachavi Mach Kamosha Ketuv Sham. And he never consummated marriage like it's written in those chronicles. The Haim Lo Yad'u. Aaron and Miriam didn't know about this because they Dibu Bo Shalon is Kakla. When they're talking about him with this Ishakushit, they didn't know that they had never consummated the marriage. So what were they saying Lashon Hara about? Oh, Moshe has a mistress. Moshe has another wife other than Zipporah. Zehu Ikar Pshuto, says Rashbam. This is the meaning of the text that I'm going to retranslate the word Pshat. I'm going to be using from now on the word Pshat without translating it, and I'm going to translate it now. But I'm going to refer to it in Hebrew. Until now, I've been making reference to it, calling it the simple meaning of the text. It is not the simple meaning of the text. Pshat is the clearest meaning of the text to make it fit into context, to make the text flow. That's what pshat is. Pshat is, how does the story make sense and flow? So he says, for the story to make sense and flow, the Ishakushit is not Zipporah. How could it be Zipporah? Zipporah is from Midian. It's another Ishakushit, which we know about, documented historical fact that Moshe had a Kushit wife. So therefore, that's who this Ishakushit was. And he continues on to explain that we know because Zipporah was a Kushit, and why would they call her, Zipporah was a Midianite, why would they call her a Kushit if she really was a Midianite? And this whole lineage she goes through also. So we don't have a copy of those documents. But I am sure that if you would go back and look at ancient history books, that it might be recorded in there.
But I'm looking.
Brush up on your
right.
The Torah is not a history book. So Rashbam is looking at another history book to see if he can find details that could fill in the spaces in the Torah. This is what Rashbam says. Take it or leave it.
How would Miriam and Aaron know about this? If after that he ran away, ran to Midian, left. I'm assuming he left this woman behind.
So if
they left
before
they got the newspaper delivered to their doorstep,
yes.
how would they know about
that? Yes. So assuming he left her behind, that's an excellent problem with Rashbam. No privilege is perfect. Nothing's going to fit 100%. But that's good. No, but that's important. It shows that you're thinking to point out a problem with Rashbam. Now, Ibn Ezra takes a different approach. He explains that the Kushit was Zipporah, and what were they saying about her is that she looked like a Kushit, because her skin was so dark because she was sitting outside in the sun the whole time. But you need to read, there's part of it that we have to read inside. Because he makes reference, you know what, we're going to skip the Ibn Ezra for now because I want to do a little more, oh my gosh, Rashi work. Okay. Source number 3 is the Rashi, with a capital T for the and a capital R for Rashi, if you're writing in English. This is Rashi's mission statement. Rashi's mission statement shows up in Bereishit Paragimel Pasuk Chet. And he says as follows, and this is to clarify what I said earlier, that anyone who learned that Rashi is the straightforward, simple meaning of the text, that is incorrect. Rashi says himself, Yesh midrashei agadah rabim. There are lots and lots and lots of midrashim out there. Ukvar sidrum avotenu amechonam bebeishit rabau v'shar midrashot. They are compiled and put together and edited in beautiful editions of midrashim. In other words, I don't need to bring you all the midrashim. So what am I coming for? Vani lo bati ela lipshuto shel mikra. And I left, you can see the translations of some of the words blank. I pshuto shel mikra is the pshat of the text, which I'm translating to you based on studies of Nechama Leibowitz. I'm translating to you as the flow of the text. Ula agadah miyashevet tigre hamikra. And I'm going to bring you the midrash that fits in or answers any questions that we might have with the words of the text. Davar davor alef nav, each word properly. So that being in mind, understanding this concept, as I mentioned to you before, that 70% of Rashi's interpretation is not original, rather it is culled from midrashim, but the brilliance of Rashi is which midrashim he chooses. He always has an educational purpose, and his midrash always fits into the flow of the text. So if you'll give me a few more minutes of your brains, again, I know it's right, but let's look in source number 4, is Rashi, on this pasuk of the Tadaber Miriam Ba'aron. It's brilliant. The Tadaber Miriam Ba'aron, Miriam Ba'aron's book, he patra b'dibor shtchila. She initiated the conversation, as Zoya mentioned. Did I skip? Yeah, you're missing part of the Rashi. Okay, but if you can read Rashi. He passed over those tchila. Lefichach hikdima akachu tchila. Okay, I skipped the whole section, I'm sorry. I was wondering why I was so short. And therefore, since she started, the Torah mentions her first. Uminayin hata yodat Miriam shepiresh Moshe min ha'isha. This is very interesting. And how did Miriam know, says Rashi, that Moshe had separated himself from his wife? Rashi's assuming that we know this information already, that Moshe and Tzipora are not living together in the same tent. How did Miriam know that they weren't living together in the same tent? Rabbi Nachman says, Miriam had taught the tribe Tzipora. Miriam was standing next to Tzipora, and here's where we go back. The Sha'ashin Amal Moshe, at the time of Moshe was told, we can go back to our text now, El Daru Meida Minabim Amachana. Miriam was standing next to Moshe when he got the news that was recorded in last week's parsha that there are these two people who are getting nivuah in the camp, not with everybody else who was supposed to be getting nivuah in the Ohel Moed, but they were just like in the middle of nowhere getting this divine connection thing going on. Kevan Shashamat Tzipora, as soon as Tzipora heard this, Alma, she said, Oilin Eshotem Shal Elu Im Hein Nisot Hila Nivuah. So you parshim and nishotem kedaf shepiresh ba'alim imeni. So Miriam is standing nearby, and Tzipora says, "Oh, poor wives. If their husbands are charged with nevuah, then poor them, that their husbands are going to have to separate from them as my husband separated from me." Now, we've explained sort of parenthetically in previous classes that the reason Moshe needed to separate himself from Tzipora was in order to elevate his relationship with God, that was his focus. And we mentioned also in previous classes, that's why Adam and Chava were on a higher spiritual level, because they were able to have this divine connection when they were still together. Even a higher level of Nevuah, as Rav Kook explains, a higher level of Nevuah, even than Moshe Rabbeinu. But this is Tzipora's reaction. Umisham, says Rashi, Umisham yadah Miriam v'higidah la'aron. From this, Miriam knew, and she told Aaron, "Uma Miriam, Shalom Kavalid Mirto Kachnasha." And here's what you learned, Shippy. Miriam, who didn't intend to embarrass Moshe, was punished. Kavakomalei with a slap here, beginning with Toshal Chaveru. How much more so? Someone she was charged much more harshly, but even more so, somebody who was intends to do harm to his friends, to embarrass his friends, then even more so. So what were they saying about her? Because of her divorce. Al-Jod Gerusha. T'Ishak Kushit Lakach V'Atar Gersha. And now he had divorced her. And so when they said, Harak ach the Moshe Jimir Hashem, does God only speak to Moshe? They were saying, did Hashem only speak to him alone? Didn't he also speak to us? And we didn't have to separate from our husbands. So here's the beauty of Rashi. Let's take this Rashi. When you can take a Rashi and fit it right back into the flow of the psukim and translate the psukim according to Rashi, and the whole picture makes sense, then you have Rashi. So here's Rashi. That's Jabir Miriam Ba'aron. Miriam Ba'aron spoke to Moshe, about Moshe, in reference to the Cushite woman who he had married, because he had married a Cushite woman and had now divorced her. And they said, Harak ach b'Moshe jiber Hashem, does God only speak to Moshe? Hello, Gambane jiber, doesn't he speak to us? We didn't have to separate from our wife, from our husband and our wife. Why does Moshe think that he is on such a high level that he has to separate from his wife? Who does he think he is? Answers Hashem in Pasuk Gimel, Va'ish Moshe Anav Me'od. Mikol Ha'adam Asher El Pnei Ha'adama. Yeah. You got Nevuah, and Moshe got Nevuah. But I know Moshe, and you're no Moshe. Moshe is on a totally different level. That was the point. Now, remember Miriam's relationship with Moshe. What was her relationship with Moshe? As sibling, what was her emotional connection with him?
She was his wife.
She ensured that he became the future leader of the Jewish people. How did she do that?
By waiting by denial and making sure.
Good. As a result of what she had done, what was the reward that she got?
That the
or the Jewish people got?
Oh.
No. She considered it Levi. Malchus
was
from Yehuda.
Yeah. That was one of her brothers.
Oh, right. She married Kalev.
Right.
Okay.
But.
Well, there's a phrase that I'm sure you're all familiar with, Be'er Miriam, Miriam's well. And again, I could ask you at this point, theoretically, to find me the psukim in the Torah that describe Miriam's well. Because after all, how long was it with the Jewish people for? We all know this.
40 years.
Mm-hmm. The entire time they were in the desert. They were sustained. How did they get water? They're in the desert. Miriam's well. It's not there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in the psukim. It never shows up. So here I am, all gung-ho. Okay, I'm going to talk about the Be'er Miriam. Can't find it. It's not there. The first time any reference to Be'er Miriam shows up is in Rashi, when Miriam dies. Source number 5. Let's turn our few pages in our book here to the beginning of Parak Chaf, chapter 20, which is when Miriam actually dies. We'll read for a moment in English. The children of Israel, the whole assembly, arrived at the wilderness of Chin in the first month, and the people settled in Kadesh, page 843. Miriam died there, and she was buried there. There was no water for the assembly, and they gathered against Moshe and Aaron. The people called as Moshe and spoke up, saying, if only we had perished as our brethren perished before Hashem, why have you brought the congregation of Hashem to this wilderness to die there? We are no animals. And why did you bring us up from Egypt to bring us to this evil place? Like it was so great in Egypt. Not a place of seed or fig or grape or pomegranate. There is no water to drink. Moshe and Aaron went from the presence of the congregation to the entrance of the tent of meeting and fell on their faces. The glory of Hashem appeared to them. Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, take the staff, gather together the assembly, you and Aaron your brother, and speak to the rock before their eyes, that it shall give its water. You shall bring forth for them water from the rock, and give drink to the assembly and to their animals. Moshe took the staff from before Hashem, as he had commanded him. Moshe and Aaron gathered the congregation before the rock, and said to them, listen now, O rebels, Shimuna Hamorim, listen now, O rebels, shall we bring forth water for you from this rock? Then Moshe raised his arm and struck the rock with his staff twice. Abundant water came forth, and the assembly and their animals drank.
Hashem said to Moshe and Aaron, because you didn't believe in me to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you will not bring this congregation to the land that I have given them. They are the waters of strife, but the children of Israel contended with Hashem, and he was sacrificed through them. 12 Sukkim. Two huge major events, and by the end of this parak, Aaron dies. Boom. That's it. One event, Moshe finished. Moshe and Aaron died because of the way they behaved. This well-known story. Some of you probably are familiar with the opinion that the reason he was punished because he hit the rack instead of talking to the rack. Okay, if it was such a bad thing to hit the rack, why did the water come out of the rack? Okay. So, but that was the first time around. Moshe Hikatsur. That was, he was told to hit the rack, and he hit the rack. Here he was told to talk to the rack, and he hit the rack. But the water still came out. But that's for another time. Anyway, for now, Rashi looks at this, and Rashi always, like I said, he wants to make things flow. So one of the well-known questions that Rashi asks is something that we call Snechut Parshiot. What is the connection between ideas? And he looks at this, Miriam dies, and they didn't have water, and he says, here it is. This is the source of the story that we all know. And he says, source number 5, Lo Yamayim La'idah, they didn't have any water at this point. Mikan Shekol Abayim Shana Hayalahem Be'er B'shut Miriam. Learn from here that the whole 40 years they were in the desert, they had the well in Miriam's honor. And he says, this is found in the Gemara, the story is in the Gemara, and I brought you the Gemara in source number 6, Rabbi Yossi Ber of Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yossi, the son of Yehuda, says, Shloshat Hanashim Tovim Amdu LiYisrael. There were three great sustainers for the Jewish people. Eluhain, these are they, Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. The Gimel Matanot Tovot Nitnu Al Yadav. There were three great peasants that were given through their hands. The Eluhain, and these are they, the Er, the Anan, the Man. The well, the cloud of God's glory, and the Man. The Er Bishkut Miriam. The well was given in the honor of Miriam. Amud Anam Bishkut Aaron, the cloud in the honor of Aaron. Man Bishkut Moshe, the man in the honor of Moshe. And then the Gemara goes through each three things. And why Miriam? How do we know that the air, the water was given in Miriam's honor? Neita Miriam Nishtalek HaDe'er. When she died, the water left. So Ne'amar V'tamach HaMiriam, as Kosh Torah says, Miriam died there, immediately afterwards it's written, V'lo HaYamayim La'ida. There was no water. So from here we can assume that the water was connected to Miriam. This story here that's happening here in Parashat, this is happening at the end of the 40 years in the desert. So that's how you can work it out mathematically. Mm-hmm. I can show you how to do it another time. But this is at the end of the 40 years. So from here we can conclude that for the entire 40 years, because we hear no other complaint. There was a complaint right after they came through the Amsuf. But that was taken care of, and then for 40 years we hear no more complaints. So from here we can assume that at that first moment that the air was initiated, Miriam's, the air was initiated, and then later on it stayed with him for the next 40 years. Okay, I'm trying to see this time where I want to go with this. Okay, we're going to jump. So we're going to go. We're going to try to be everything. Turn the pages a little further to page 852 and 853. A little further on in our story, everything will be connected in a moment. A little further on in our story, we have what's called Shirat HaBe'er, the Song of the Well. Two psukim that show up right smack in the middle of a story, telling of travels. They went from A to B, from B to C, from C to D. And right in the middle are these two poetic things, these two pieces of poetry from Moshe. Actually, not from Moshe, from Bnei Israel, from the Jewish people. As Yashir Yisrael Teshuvah Hazot. At that point, the Jewish people sang this song. Ali Be'er Enula. Rise up, well. Call out to it. The well was dug by officers, and then the question says, this is Moshe and Aaron. She was carved out by the volunteers of the nation, the Mechokek, the Mishanotam. It was carved out with their staffs. This poem, this ode, is given to some well. And Rashi looks at this and he says, okay, what well are we talking about? We're talking about the well of Miriam. And I'm doing a little inductive reasoning here. You can look in source number 7, spring up, oh well, where is it supposed to come out from? Mitoch HaNachal, from the midst of the valley, the Ali Masha'at Ma'alam, bring up what you're bringing up in the previous one. Immediately before this, the Jewish people had some kind of fight with some of the Canaanim, and so the well is bringing up the remains of the Canaanim that were killed. So lift this up. Uminayim Shabbe'er Hodiyalahem, how do we know that the Be'er informed them? And it said from there was the well that was in the Tukum for him. It was from there. Wasn't it with them for the whole 40 years in the desert? She went down so that she could come up to publicize these miracles that were done in terms of killing the Canaanim. And similarly, then B'nai Shal sang, Hashira Hazot Nema B'Shofar Ba'im. The Be'er, the well, he said, was given to them at the beginning of the 40 years. And here they're singing this song at the end of the 40 years. What well was given to them at the beginning of the 40 years that he just said in source number 5? The Be'er Miriam. Ibn Ezra says, the Zot Be'er, source number 8, the Zot Be'er, Gamhi Haitapela, this Be'er that we're talking about here that was carved out by Moshe and Aaron was also a wonder. They never had Be'er had called Be'er Miriam, but let's see that too. But I don't think it was Be'er Miriam. But there was a particular place that Moshe said, dig here, and the leaders of Israel dug, and the water came up from there. Because Miriam's well wasn't dug. Miriam's well was that rock that he hit originally when they came out of Mitzrayim, when they came from the Absalom, and he originally hit that rock. That was Miriam's well that traveled with them then in the desert. But here's what's amazing. Ibn Ezra is in the same school of thought as Rashbam. Ibn Ezra doesn't do Midrashim. But he's doing this Midrash. He's acknowledging that there was a Be'er Miriam, which means that this is one of those things above a Maisa that's not above a Maisa.
Mm-hmm.
That was really there. And Ibn Ezra almost never... 9 times out of 10, if Ibn Ezra brings in the drash, it's to say that it's ridiculous or it's a nice story, but it has nothing to do with what we're talking about here. Here he says it's nothing to do with what we're talking about here, but it doesn't call it a nice story. He said, this is not the Be'er Miriam.
But he recognizes
the Be'er. Clearly recognizing that there was the existence of the Be'er Miriam. Okay. Kliyaka is very interesting. It also details, is this the Be'er Miriam or not, where they got the water from, and how the Be'er Miriam originally spewed forth water, and then there were little rivers, and okay, but we're going to skip that now. Source number 10 is Ramban, just saying what I said immediately before about the Be'er Miriam being that original rock that he hit, that that's what turns into Be'er Miriam also. So you could, and if you're, I could just show you the line. Three lines up from the bottom. In the middle, it says, the Afal Pisha Yahakol Be'era Shel Miriam. Even though what we're talking about here is Miriam's there. So Kabbalat Rabotenu, Kabbalat, he's not talking about Kabbalah. Kabbalat Rabotenu is what he talks about as an accepted midrash. A midrash is accepted as fact by Chazal. Not just to tell a story, but accepted as fact. Yitachen Shayabham Harishon, it could be. Could be that the first time he hit it and the water came out, and all the other 40 years, and it just, water sort of flowed from it, like it was like a river, the source of different rivers and whatever. Okay, fine. But let's go back and talk about Miriam. Here, what amazed me, and I thought I brought you this period, but I didn't bring you, why the air Miriam, why the water? Why is that associated with Miriam? She didn't find him in the water, rather she watched after him in the water, that because that was her focus, that was exactly how the Jewish people were paid back. And I want to go back to a point now also that Shifu made earlier about Miriam being on a different level. As much as Moshe was on a totally different plane, Miriam, as we mentioned last time also, Miriam HaNevi'ah, the prophetess, she's also on an unbelievably different plane. what was the story that was told immediately before the story of her death? The story that's immediately before her death is not a story. It's a chapter of technical details of how to prepare the para aduma, the red heifer, in order to the people who are tamei lameh. So you could say purify. Yeah, that's my tarana mishpacha class about tahara and tumah, not being purity and impurity. But okay, in order to make a person able who has come in contact with something that has come in contact with death or has directly come in contact with death himself, in order to make that person able, permissible, to re-enter the Beit HaMikdash and to bring his korbanot, all pashas has to be done. You take the cow, and a certain person has to take the cow, and then you kill it, and another person mixes the ashes, and you burn it, and you mix it with something else, and then you pour it, and you sprinkle it, and you do all these kinds of things, and you wait 7 days, and you sprinkle it again, and 3 days from the seventh day, and like all this stuff is written there. And then you have immediately after Miriam's death. And again, like I said before, Rashi's very much into connections. How does it flow? So he says, this is one version of Rashi. Source number 11. Lama nismacha parashat nitat Miriam parashat paradima. Why is the story of Miriam's death written immediately next to the details of paradima? Lamar had to tell you, ma korbanot mechapen ach nitat tzadikim mechaperet. And there was another addition. It says just the sacrifices make atonement, so the death of the righteous makes an atonement. There's another edition of Rashi that doesn't use the word sacrifices, but uses the word para aduma, just like the para aduma atones. And those who have this edition of the korbanot go through this whole academic discussion of how does it make sense, but we're not going there. But the point is that here Miriam was unbelievable tzadeket, that she was on such a high level that her death atoned for certain sins that maybe the Jewish people might have done at that point. And how did she die? There's something that's written. Turn to the description of Aaron's death. Parak Lamed Gimel, Pesuk Lamed Aleph, I think. Lamed something in there. Page 920, 921. Is it there? Oh, no, it doesn't say it there. Okay. It says in Pasuk Lamed Zayin 37, Lamed Chet, sorry, 38. How did Aaron die? Al pi Hashem, from the mouth of God. And Rashi explains to us, so what does it mean by the mouth of God? Page 920. He was given what we call Meshikat Mavet, the ultimate, the highest level of death, so to speak, the purest death, where God, so to speak, kisses the person, and by doing that, takes back the neshama. That's how Aaron dies. Look at the end of Devarim, when Moshe dies. The very, very end. I think it's in there. It might not be in the very end. Might be somewhere else. Oh, when he tells Moshe, no, it's when Hashem tells Moshe, Moshe, you're going to die. Yeah, also. Okay, page 1123, verse 5. Pasuk Hei. Hashem Moab, again, Al Pi Hashem. And Moshe also died with this Nishikat Mavet. But what does it say for Miriam? The Tamat Shal Miriam, Miriam died there, and she was buried there. Doesn't say anything about here. You know, she's Miriam. She's part of this triumvirate. The super three superheroes, you know, Miriam, Aaron, and Moshe. How could it be that she didn't also get this Nisikat Mavet, this kiss of death? Explains Rashi, but Tamacha Miriam, Miriam died there, Afhi Minisikat Mita. She also died with this kiss of death. So why doesn't the Torah use the words Al-Pi Hashem to give us this message? It's not appropriate. She was a woman. It was not appropriate to say that. But the point is, like, look at Miriam. Like, it's amazing. We did this whole section of Miriam doing this chait, Miriam gossiping about her sister-in-law or her brother's mistress or whoever it was. Like, but she's Miriam. She's amazing. Her death was mechaper. Her
the bear.
Her, she got this, and she can't mind it. That's how she died, from this special connection with Hashem that she had, because she ensured the future of the Jewish people. And I want to share with you an Or HaChaim. I haven't looked at it in 10 years until now. I was telling you, 10 years ago, I took a trip after I finished my studies in seminary. Now you all know how old I am. You probably know anyway. We took a trip to the school that I learned in, Mechalat, took a trip afterwards to Poland, an optional trip. And I went on this trip. It was very well done. We each had to prepare a particular community beforehand, and I don't remember what community I was supposed to prepare, but you're supposed to prepare it, and then presented a large focus being on what was before the Holocaust. Not so much the destruction, although of course we went to some of the camps, but what was the Torah that was existing beforehand. One of the towns that we were going to that I saw on our list was Lomza. My grandmother grew up in the town of Vizhna. Vizhna is not Vizhnitz, and it's not Vilna, and it's not Vizhnyav, and it's not anything else. It's Vizhna. Vizhna is a teeny, teeny, less than a speck on the map next to Lomza. So I'm looking through these books in the Nechala Library to prepare for the trip, and I'm very distractible. And I find a book of a list of rabbanim, rabbis, in the diaspora in the early 20th century. And I look in Vizhna, I'm like, look in Lomza area, Vizhna, right there, it says Rav Bezalel Atlas, which is my grandmother's grandfather, that's who my child Bezalel's names were. He was a Rosh Yeshiva. I learned about all these things that he did in his daily practice and everything, whatever. It was really, really neat. So we go to Poland, and we're driving, we stop at Lomza. And I said to the driver, they said to us beforehand, if any of your families came from any of these places, let us know, we'll see what we can do. We stopped and got off the bus at Vizhna. He found, our tour guide found a guy, asked him, did you know the old Rabbi Atlas? He said, well, I don't really remember the old one, but I know he had a son, which he did, who was a teacher, which he was, who lived in that house over there. I got goosebumps. Whatever. Okay, I should know what happened to them, which was not... They didn't survive the war. But it was the most amazing thing. And then we spent Shabbos in Krakow, and I was asked to give a Dvar Torah. I'm like, okay, here we go. My grandmother had passed away already at this point. And it was this Shabbos. It was Parshat Chukat, Miriam's death. And here we are in Poland, learning about the Torah life that was there before. My grandmother's grandfather, who was a Rosh Yeshiva from there before. And I read this Or HaChaim, and it's unbelievable. Okay? Then you're asked. When it's mentioning her death, he's careful on the honor of the tzaddiket. Shehare amru tzaddikim b'mitzatam kurim chayim. Chazal tell us that tzaddikim and their death are called living. He's being specific to say that perush. Oh, sorry. Therefore, it says specifically that to give her sham, that she was buried there on that spot. That this where she died and she didn't stay among them. Ella b'makom acher yeshna ben ha-tzadikim. She has another place among the tzadikim. And this is the greatest part. Tzadikim zomim lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'margaliot ha-monochim ba'argaz. Tzadikim to God are like pearls in a jewelry box. Kishehu chafeit b'achad mehem. When he wants one of them, who motzi'a meha'argaz, he takes her out of the jewelry box, the Kove Abba Tachshit Achad Mitachshitaz, and he sets her in one of his jewelry settings. Rabbeinu Zal Dershu Vatamacham, etc., etc. And Chazal tells us that when he says Vatamacham, talking about saying Shagam Himeta Ben Shikha, that she also died with the case of Shibim Hanim Batorah. And he finishes this off because he gives a number of reasons why did it say Vatikha Bersham, but the beautiful one that I was explaining to you, Vatikha Bersham, she was buried there, that she wasn't left there. Her body maybe was there, but her essence, her neshama, was with something else, was put back into this jewelry box of these pearls. She was removed from her setting. Her tachshit, her setting, is there, but the actual pearl is back in the jewelry box of the other tzaddikim. And it was just so, it was very powerful at the moment, and I hope I could transmit some of that power to you. And this ends for now our discussion on women in Tanakh, although I did want to get to Tzipora, but we never made it. But we'll see you next week. Have a good week.